This is the Champions Rugby Show. I'm Martin Hindley, and today's special guest was partying for most of 1999.
The big problem that David Humphreys has to worry about is, can he fill this cup up to the brim with champagne or whatever else, and will it ever empty? What a reception awaits this side when they come back to the north of Ireland.
This man captained Ulster Rugby to the greatest season in their history as they conquered Europe. He was an inspirational outside half for Ireland. He's also had a wonderful coaching career with Ulster, and he's now Gloucester's director of rugby. I'm delighted to say that joining me today to look back at many special memories in what is now the Heineken Champions Cup is David Humphreys. How are you?
I'm very good, Martin. Good afternoon. Very nice to be sitting chatting to you.
Well, we're going to be talking about Ulster's amazing European Cup win in 1999 shortly. But first of all, let's go back to the beginning when you began your senior career with London Irish. What are your memories from back then, and how did that come about?
In 1995, I had been playing rugby at university in England, and we met Clive Woodward up in Oxford in December time. And he talked about, he was coach of London Irish at that stage. And he talked about the games about to go professional and the opportunities that were going to come out there for a number of players. And he persuaded us at that stage to join London Irish, who were playing in the second division. And then we got promoted at the end of that year, and then had 2 years with Clive and London Irish competing in Division One, which is now the Premiership. And it was my first real taste of professional rugby. We had a really good group of young Irish players, and it was just a fantastic time to be both playing rugby and not having to do much else.
The Heineken Cup started in the 95-96 season. When it came around as players, how did you view the tournament, and what were your thoughts about playing all of a sudden European club rugby?
That's a question I'm not really sure that I know the answer to. And I say that because in those first couple of years, I played for London Irish 1 year in European competition. But then at some stage, there was a number of players who were playing in England that actually went back to play for Ulster as well. So it was probably at that stage, none of us had any idea of how the competition was going to grow to become the premier club competition in Europe. But it wasn't really till I came back. And even in that first year coming back into Ulster, probably didn't understand the significance of European competition. And it was really that journey they went on which caught the public's imagination back in Belfast, set up really in Irish terms what would start a period of very successful provincial rugby. And obviously with Munster and Leinster then leading from the front in terms of not quite dominating Europe for the next decade, but been very, very much part of the European history and tradition.
When you returned to Ulster at the start of that season, did you have any inkling that group of players could achieve what you went on to achieve in Europe?
Absolutely not. In your sporting career, there are people who are very successful and play for very good teams all the way through. There are people who are very fortunate, very lucky, who just happen to be part of a team that achieves something that nobody would ever have expected. And certainly any of us who were part of that Ulster 98-99 season journey in the European Cup very much consider ourselves fortunate to have arrived in Ulster at that time. Don't forget that about six or seven of us had just come back from England. This was Ireland's first real contracting cycle. They brought players back because they wanted to bring Irish players back to play within the provinces and to give them more control over their training. But it was more a case of it was very experimental in our squad of 25 players, and don't even think 50% of us were full-time. So that's how much we were thrown together at the start of the year. We all came back, as I said, from England. We started pre-season training and then just happened to be part of six or seven games where the defining moment of my sporting career. I'd played rugby for quite a while, Martin, as an amateur. So to be part of this was something I could never have envisaged. None of us could have envisaged. But we just happened to be a group of players that there was a unique formula, because none of us at that stage were particularly special players. There was nothing special about the team. But we all just happened to find some form and a little bit of luck along the way. And we'd always look back on it as a very special time.
You mention a little bit of fortune. Looking back, and especially reading back Jonathan Bradley's book, The Last Amateurs, about that season, it certainly seems right now, as we look back, to have been something almost predestined, name on the trophy kind of stuff. If you think of the last kick of the match and Craig Chalmers and Edinburgh, it could have changed the course of history, really. I mean, what do you remember about the early stages of that? It seemed as if looking back, as if Ulster grew in confidence with every near miss, with every moment of brilliance.
Martin, some of the things that you're saying probably bring back the memories more than anything else, because unlike now where you can get games at the flick of the switch for the last 10 years, there aren't really any recordings of those games that we played in. So it's very much, as you said, what you recall from the game. So the season started off actually in a real low. I remember sitting with Mark McCall in a cafe in Belfast, and you know, he told me at that point that his career was finished because of a neck injury he'd picked up in one of the early season games. So the start of the season was tinged with a huge sense of disappointment. Mark had been a very good friend of mine since we started playing with Ulster that in the early 90s. And he was one of the big reasons that we had all decided to come back and play for Ulster. And to lose him, who had been a pretty inspirational figure, he was the captain of the team, almost set the season off on a real negative. But I think that's where his personality at that stage, instead of feeling sorry for himself, he threw himself right into the coaching aspect of it. He worked very closely with Carrie Williams, Colin Wilkinson, and they managed to get us, everybody enthusiastic and excited, really, about playing. But as you said, you look through nearly all the games we played. The very first game of the season against Edinburgh in Belfast, and we were 20-odd nil down after 10 or 15 minutes. So you're looking around thinking, where does it go from here? And it can only go one way. We managed to get back and get a draw. And then Toulouse had beaten Ebbeville 100 and something to nothing almost, I think, in the first game. For a few rounds later, Ebbeville beat Toulouse, which then gave us the opportunity to go to Edinburgh to win and qualify for the quarterfinals. So all the way through, we never expected to. Toulouse had beaten us by 40 points in the second game. And then we had a really, really good game. And do you know what? The rivalry with Toulouse, maybe it's not a rivalry, but we'd so many games with Toulouse from then all the way through, really what I remember as part of my Ulster experience in the Heineken Cup. And the pool game was good, but then it was really the only games for me that stood out in that season were the quarterfinal and semi-final, which when we played Toulouse and Stade Francais, who were the two big teams, obviously without English teams, playing with the two big teams in the competition.
It's all over! Jim Fleming has blown the whistle! Fairy tale continues. Simon Mason, again the hero, the man who's kicked the points, but the other 14 and the two replacements are heroes.
You mentioned the atmosphere. One of the fortunate things that we have right now, looking back at the nostalgic moments of the Heineken Cup and sort of flicking back through the semi-final against Stade Francais, something that really hits you even through the YouTube clips and things like that is the atmosphere. I think... These days, if you did a straw poll around Belfast, you'd probably get 50, 60, 70,000 people saying they were there. Did you ever have any better experiences? And what impact did it have on the players to have such an atmosphere at Ravenhill back then?
More than anything else, Martin, that's what I always take away from that particular year, that I'd grown up playing for Ulster. When I started my career playing for Ulster, you were playing in front of several hundred people, a few thousand people. At the start of that European competition, there were bigger crowds. But it was those two or three games, the Toulouse and Stade Francais in particular, both played in Belfast, that really captured the public imagination, really put Ulster rugby in the public eye. And really then, there's no real recollection of any highlights from the game and the final itself, except that by the time we got to the final, we just didn't believe we could lose. I think all the way through, we half expected our bubble to burst, whether that was against Toulouse or Stade Francais. But the confidence that came, probably more than anything else, from that Stade Francais game, when they came to us, we at that stage had maybe two or three internationals in our team. But we equally, unlike many of the teams now, we'd only two or three players who weren't from Ulster, who weren't from Northern Ireland. And we fully understood by that stage what this meant to everybody around. Everybody you talked to was looking forward to it. And, you know, they were just hugely proud they've been part of those games that we played in. And as you said, certainly the final, 49,000 people in Lansdowne Road. And of those, I think probably 48,900 were supporting Ulster. And it was those two games, the semi-final and final, were the best two atmospheres that I ever played in my career.
If I remember rightly, wasn't Andy Ward having to be substituted towards the end of that semi-final as his wife was about to give birth? I mean, it all adds to that anecdote, that story, to what was a pretty frantic and chaotic finale to the game. It must have been incredible to be a part of as a player.
It was actually the quarterfinal. It was against Toulouse that happened. We still give Andy a lot of stick because I don't think his wife gave birth till the next morning. So we just thought it was part of his story around having to be taken away. I think it was about 20, 25 minutes to go. The chief constable at the time, Ronnie Flanagan, was a big Ulster supporter. It was his bodyguard drove him at high breakneck speed through Belfast to get to the hospital. And then, as I said, nothing happened. So, you know, that story, like many stories, has grown, and the legend has grown with more and more years going by. But, you know, there's so many stories like that around the players that were involved, that you had players who were, you know, we were still training in the evenings for a lot of those weeks. And because we had players who were working all day, full-time job, and then coming to train Tuesday, Thursday night, there were a lot of us who were professional who were able to train and do a little bit extra. But it was just, as I said, a complete, I don't know, mishmash of players who came from the province. And just the atmosphere that our supporters created will always live long in the memory. It was the atmosphere at each of those games, and particularly the final. And that was all about the supporters and the passion that they brought and the pride that they brought in saying Ulster being represented on a, not necessarily on a global scale, but certainly in a European context. That's why we all enjoyed it so much.
When did you first realise what your achievements as a group meant, not only to the club and to the fans and the city, but to sport in Northern Ireland? When did that really hit home for you?
Oh, man, that's probably a pretty deep question, and I'm not sure that I've really thought through. As you'll have seen over the last 20 plus years, different teams, different people from Northern Ireland have represented the country and the province with distinction in both individual and team sports. And every time we get that success, it is a way we feel that we're all part of that journey, no matter whether from Rory McIlroy and the golfers and through the football team, through some of the GAA teams that have success in an All-Ireland context. We all enjoy that success because we want to bring pride in where we're from. And I think, again, as I said, that was probably the thing that lots of teams, certainly the Irish provincial teams, had that pride, that identity, that history, that from an Ulster point of view, everybody in Ulster enjoys that sporting success, no matter what sport it is. You know, we love to see people from our part of the world being successful.
When you saw out of the bus the sea of red jerseys in Dublin on the way to Lansdowne Road for the final, could you quite believe it? Was it a surprise, even though the tickets sold out so quickly for the game? I mean, that must have been so inspirational in itself to see Dublin painted red.
Yeah, we were definitely shocked by how many supporters were there. I think it was our Colin Wilkinson, our assistant coach at the stage, as we'd driven from the hotel into the ground, it had taken a while because it was so busy. As we arrived at Lansdowne Road, he said something along the lines of, "Can we do that again?" You know, that was what it, you know, that was it. It was almost, that was the highlight, one of the highlights of the day. It was fantastic. Some of us had been fortunate enough to experience travelling to Lansdowne Road to play international rugby. So you knew that the route was always lined with supporters. But this was different. This was Ulster supporters, and the 49,000, they were all Ulster supporters. And it just felt like the whole of the country had become Ulster supporters and were right in behind us all the way through. And then, you know, again, people talk a little bit about before the game. We stood before, and in the old Lansdowne Road, the East Stand was the big stand on the far side when you came out from the dressing room. And I remember, because of that connection that we developed with our supporters, because of the way that the interest was there and people had got in behind us, we went across and stood in front of them and acknowledged the support before the game. And for me, that was one of those moments in sport that, during my career, made the hairs in the back of your neck stand and end. It was one of those goosebump moments that, again, meant more than anything else. And the day, that's when we felt, I think, at that point, that we were going to win the game. It was just one of the most biggest, the strongest atmospheres, hostile, the word I'm looking for, the most hostile atmosphere. If you weren't an Ulster player that day, it was a pretty intimidating place to be in. We were against some big French players, and like on the day, they didn't really fire a shot, and it was a pretty comfortable win in the end.
Jacob Thomas has blown his whistle, and Ulster have won the European Cup. Delight for David Humphreys, and Lansdowne Road really has erupted in a sea of red and white. Ulster have won the European Cup, beating Colomiers from France by 21 points to 6.
I was fortunate enough to be at the Kingspan Stadium for Ulster's match against Racing last season, when many of the band got back together to celebrate the 20th anniversary. And it seemed, it seemed like a group of not only teammates who'd celebrated something special, it seemed like a group of friends. Is that the case? I mean, and what role did that play in getting over the line in difficult situations like you faced against Toulouse and also the one you mentioned against Stade Français?
A lot of us had come through the Northern Ireland school system. We played rugby against each other at school level. We played rugby with each other at Ulster schools level and Irish schools level, and then through the Ulster team. So it was a squad that knew each other very well. In those days, there was very, very little turnover of players unless there was retirement or injury. It wasn't like it is now. I think from memory again, Justin Fitzpatrick had come across from England. Simon Mason had come across from England. And apart from that, as you said, all of us had known each other for a long time. And there's no doubt when you are involved in that sort of sporting journey is a word that's used a lot. But you know, when you're involved in something where you expect nothing and manage to get to a point where you win a big competition, you do create a bond because there's no pressure. And then all of a sudden, as the competition progresses, the pressure starts to build. And that's when you rely on the people around you. And, you know, we all became good friends. I'm still in contact with a lot of them now that I played with then. And, you know, it's still good fun to when we get a chance to meet up.
How much did your success as a player then help you to be able to start that, orchestrate that turnaround when you went on to the coaching staff at Ulster and help to re-establish them as one of the true giants of the European rugby scene? Is there a link between the experience as a player and what you then started to achieve as a coach?
From my point of view, I really didn't expect to stay involved. I had been doing work experience 2 days a week in the last year of my contract with a view to going back to work, to a proper job, in inverted commas. But I think as players, we all understood what Ulster was lacking. And that was a little bit of quality, but we also knew, and having been there, I didn't really play much in that 07-08 season because some of them would have said I was too old, but I certainly picked up some injuries. But we knew we had a very good crop of young players coming through. We knew that there was the basis there for the next, you know, 5-6 years. But we also knew that to be successful, and it's what Munster and then ultimately Leinster did very successfully, you've got to create that squad of good, homegrown, local players who have that history and identity and pride in playing for who they represent, but then add this real quality on top of that. And while we had good individual foreign players, people like Justin Harrison, Robbie Kempson, Matt Sexton, with the support of the board in Ulster, with the success, the support of the IRFU, we were able to say, look, if we can add these three or four players in to the group we've got coming through, we believe Ulster will become more and more competitive. We identified three or four players at the time who were available and we felt could really, really make Ulster competitive. And when we signed them, we were very excited. But to be honest, even looking back now, when we first signed them, that was more around 2010 that we signed those players, that we probably didn't realise how good they would be for Ulster. And looking back now, none of us probably realised how good that team in 2012 to 2014 was. And biggest disappointment in my career is we didn't win anything. Leinster seemed to beat us every year.
Well, Leinster, this is the moment that gives them the chance to be crowned, surely, the greatest of Heineken Cup sides in the history of this competition. Leinster win this final in a record margin. They blow Ulster away.
That little bit of luck that I've said to you at the start that I believe played a huge role in allowing us to win the competition. We just felt that we lost that and or didn't have that, maybe not lost it, but we didn't have that during those 2 or 3 years from 2012 to 2014.
Does what you describe there speak for the depth of quality that you find not just at the start of the last decade, but also now in your position with Gloucester Rugby when you get to Heineken Champions Cup level? Because Leinster have been on a different plane quite often over the last decade, and with Saracens and Toulon, the only club to actually lift the trophies, those three over the last decade. I mean, does that speak for the strength in depth of the Heineken Champions Cup?
Oh, the Heineken Champions Cup is an absolutely unbelievable competition to be part of. It's something that, you know, I certainly coming from an Irish background, those are the weeks when the season structure set out, those are the weeks you look for. You're excited about the Heineken Cup Champions Cup draw. And that's what you build your season around. That's the structure around which you build your season. For me, it's very clear. There's club competition, there's international competition, and the Champions Cup sits in between. And that's why I believe the teams that have really, as you said, the teams that you've talked about, the Toulon, Toulouse, Leinster, Munster, those are the teams that have top international players. And that's why when they play in top club competition, they're the standout teams because they have got the best players. And it was a challenge in Ulster to try and get competitive. And now in Gloucester, we do understand the importance. It's been an aspiration of mine since we arrived there. Gloucester hadn't been playing in the Heineken Champions Cup for a period of time. Our aspiration was to get back into that competition. And while we haven't yet competed in any way in it, it's something that, as a club, to really gauge your success. Yes, we want to be successful in the Premiership, but ultimately you want to be judged against the best teams in Europe, which is the Heineken Champions Cup.
What do you enjoy the most about your role these days and the perspective that it gives you on the whole sport, really?
Well, there's no doubt that the last 6 weeks and the last 8 weeks in terms of COVID-19 and the impact that that's had on sport has really caused us to look hard at the sport, look hard at the direction of the sport, look hard at ensuring the sport that we have is going to be in a position to grow as we come out of the challenges that we currently face. But for me, in the role that I'm in, if I look back to 2014, having been in Ulster for such a long period of time, it was that loss to Saracens in the quarterfinal of the Champions Cup, where I just felt like I had given 6 years to Ulster. We built a competitive team, but we hadn't managed to take that step to win something. I felt that was time for someone else. And coincidentally, the opportunity to come to Gloucester arose around the same time. And the challenge there was, it was a club like Ulster. It hadn't had success. It hadn't competed at the top of the of either competition for a long period of time. And the challenge for me in the role that I do is trying to ensure that you're building a club right from the bottom. So from your young academy players, because I fundamentally believe that successful clubs have players coming through their system who understand the responsibility, the pride in playing for their home club, for playing for Gloucester. And that comes from players who come through your academy system. So my view is we have got to try and build a club around the players that come in. Again, like Ulster, you've always got to supplement it with good recruitment. You've got to supplement it with world-class recruitment. But you've got to retain the players in your system that you believe can allow the club to be successful. We haven't always been able to do that. So the challenge now is, certainly from a Gloucester point of view, Martin, over the last 3 years, we've taken some very positive steps, both on the field in terms of our overall performance to being very competitive, but also behind the scenes in putting together a really, really strong academy program under Peter Walton. I don't think the job in these clubs, in any club, is ever finished, but all of us have an opportunity when we move into a club to try and build that club, to make that club successful, understanding that in the job that we do, there will come a point in time where it's someone else's turn. I think there's a great saying in football management. A football manager at any point in his career, he's either just been sacked or is just about to be sacked. And somewhere, we all live somewhere along that spectrum. And, some people survive longer than others.
As you say, it's a privilege to be involved in sport, and it's certainly been a privilege to sort of relive your history in the Heineken Champions Cup, David. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing your passion and your reflections on some very, very special memories, and we wish you the very, very best in the next chapter for David Humphreys.
Thanks very much, Martin. I really enjoyed it.
Some fascinating insights there from Ulster's former captain David Humphreys on the great days at Ravenhill in 99, on lifting the European Cup in Dublin, and on the strength and depth of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. We hope that you'll subscribe to our Champions Rugby Show podcast and leave us a review as well if you like, and let us know which players you want to come on the show next to share their Heineken Champions Cup stories. If you're new to the show, just a reminder that Brian Habana, Jamie Heaslip, Alan Quinlan, Nick Abendon and Pat Lamb and Martin Williams are just some of the names in our back catalogue of trips down memory lane, and we hope that you enjoy them. But from me and all the team, until the next European legend joins us on the Champions Rugby Show, it's time to say goodbye.